Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network.
Hello, fellow geekologists. Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. And this is a bonus episode here on the main feed within our series of The Faces Behind Us. I have a couple Tolkien heads with me, Nick Polk, Trip Fuller, and we did a whole, like, almost an hour talking about the legacy and the family tree of Durin and the faces behind us. And we're doing this backwards. It's like the upside down. That conversation's happening way over for on our fourth wall site that you can see and our show notes. You can hop over there and listen as a subscriber. You can go to Spotify and you can find that there, and it has a little lock on it. You can unlock it by being even a free subscriber. But now we're doing the bonus question here on the main feed, and we have a couple bonus questions. For those who like to geek out on The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, all things Tolkien, well, I have some experts here with me, and we're going to answer some bonus questions just to kind of play around with it, you know, geekdom as play, theology as play, and that's what us geeks do. We sit around, we have drinks, we have cigars, and smoke our pipes, and geek out on Tolkien. So that's what we're going to do right now. We have three questions.
That's what we're doing.
That we're gonna go around the horn, and we're gonna ask these questions.
But Will Bo Baggins, we just need everyone listening now, because a lot of these people are not even members yet.
That's right. Okay, do your marketing spiel there, Trip.
No. I just want everyone to know the Systematic Ecology Podcast. Like, just imagine trying to coordinate schedules with like 40 different people that all have different nerd kingdoms that they're into, and then hooking it with themes, and then bringing all these people together, and then inviting your friends on a regular basis to create podcasts where if you just hop in and you're even mildly interested in it, all of a sudden you get the wisdom of multiple friends who are now like nerding out with deep dive energy. I'm just saying, you know what you should do right now? You should go ahead and become a member of Systematic Geekology. And you will have hours of enjoyment that you didn't even know were there. Don't you like sit there and say to yourself, you know how many times I'm sitting here bored and I would be really, really fulfilled for a significant conversation with some nerdy goodness, with some fellow geeks? It already exists and you can have access to it. And Joshua has to coordinate all these schedules and calendars. It's crazy.
It is. Like,
you should tell them thank you, but you know the best way to say thank you is to become a member, and you can be a member like me. I donate every month. You can donate every month, and then you can have a lot of fun, because one, I didn't know that we were recording a members-only podcast when I spent a lot of time preparing for a conversation on Durin, and I feel like you should go listen to it, and it was a lot of fun. And
yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to say any of this stuff I said then, right now, despite the fact that you don't get to listen to it unless you become a member. So you should go be a member right now. And Wilbo Baggins, if someone becomes a member when they're listening to this, you should tell me. I'll give them a discount code for Theology Beer Camp. That's what I'll do. This is the lure. I'm giving the lure. How much does it cost to be a member for a year?
There are free subscribers. There are tiers. You could be like, you can tier it up. You could do like free, you could do 5, 10, 25. You could become a wizard like our friend Nick. And, you can tier it up. And I think it is like, this isn't just like Right. This isn't something that just like happens out of the blue. Like there's a lot of the work that goes into this. And so to go over there and be a subscriber and do that, then yeah, you're making it all.
Well, then I'll give you a code, but you have to remind me because I might have been enjoying, because we're talking about dwarves. Mm-hmm. I'm like Gimli trying to outdrink an elf, which doesn't go well. I'm just saying I'll send you code for any of your members and or new members to get $50 off for Theology Beer Camp. This is a lure to join.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm just trying to I want Joshua to start outsourcing editing so I'm not told to go short when I'm talking about Doran. Trip, I have to edit these all myself. You can't talk for 2 hours with Nick about Doran. And I'm like, why? I have a 21-page outline of what I wanted to talk about. So I'm just saying, there's Trip sales pitch in
lure. I love it. Trip, thanks, man. Thanks for that. And yeah, Theology Beer Camp. We're part of the Pop God stage. We're part of the Geek stage. We're going to keep doing it. And some of the conversations we're having here around Tolkien and the things we get on, it happens at Theology Beer Camp, and it's one of my favorite parts of it. So three questions here that are bonus extra. We have one. And thinking about the afterlife, and thinking about what happens after Middle Earth, do dwarves, elves, men go to the same afterlife or realm, or different realms? I'm curious about that. And then the second question is, what happens to dwarves after the Lord of the Rings? I don't know if we're talking about the Age of Men. Where they go? What happens? I don't know. And then Tripp has one where he was really curious. What dwarven realm would you want to visit and what age? And we have to, all three of us have to go together because we can't do this separate.
It's a road trip.
It's a road trip. So that first one, thinking about the afterlife, thinking about what happens, at the end of Lord of the Rings, when they hop on the elven ships and they're heading off to where, Nick? Where are they headed? They're headed off to,
it's unclear, it's either Valinor or the Isle of Tol Eressëa.
And there's some hobbits and some elves on that ship. But, in terms of the diversity that happens in Middle Earth, these different races of elves, men, hobbits, elves, do they go to the same place or different one? I'm curious. My just first hot take is like, man, if they're entangled and do life together in Middle Earth, why wouldn't they do it after together? So same way, like C.S. Lewis talks about, like, yeah, do dogs go to heaven? Well, animals go to heaven, or animals a part of the afterlife with us in the new creation. If they have a big part of how we do life here on Earth now, why wouldn't they on the next one? Is it kind of my take on things? So I would say separate would seem weird since they were so immersed and embedded with each other and their journeys together in that age together. Why wouldn't it be the next one? But Nick, what are you thinking? What drew that kind of question as we were discussing off air, what that would look like?
It's weird because Middle Earth is an interesting place in the way that Tolkien writes is because the dwarves, humans, and elves, and even the orcs to a certain extent, all kind of believe in honor the same, I mean, not the same, but different beings like the Valar and stuff, but they have their different traditions on how they function and interact with them throughout like their entire metaphysical existence. And if we're talking about death here, okay, there is no heaven in Middle Earth. Okay.
Right.
And, We'll stick to the beginning here. We'll talk about the life cycle. So elves are technically not immortal. They are serially longeval, which means that as long as the earth exists and nobody kills them, they will live as long as the earth exists.
Wow.
So that's the elves. But once, Iluvatar decides, it's time to have the new creation, the elves will kind of be renewed or go, whatever. So when elves die, their spirits go to this waiting place called the Halls of Mandos. There's a Vala, lower G god named Mandos, and he's basically just hanging out with the elves, their spirits, and eventually elves actually do reincarnate. So we only see one instance in the whole legendarium, and it's this elf named Glorfindel. Okay. But the elves basically can reincarnate as their, if they die, their spirit goes to the halls of Mandos. Mandos rehouses their bodies. Okay. That's one example.
That's cool. I'm learning new stuff here. I didn't know all that. That's good.
Yeah. So men, they will die, right? Men are mortal and humans go beyond the walls of the world. It's a mystery. No one knows where humans are going. So Iluvatar right now is the only one who can dwell outside of creation. And apparently the tradition is that humans get to go beyond the walls of the world. Possibly they might be hanging out in the halls of Mandos before they get there as like a transitionary place. But it's unclear. The whole afterlife for humans is a mystery. Now the dwarves, we know almost nothing with certainty about what's happening to them. The elves think that they just kind of go back to the dirt. They just become stone when they die. Classic elves. They're like, we get to go to the halls of Mandos and be reincarnated and live our best lives. And they're
back
like
to
dwarves,
dust.
Obviously.
Back to Ash Wednesday, you dwarves.
You short people.
Stunted ones. You oh stunted ones.
And but the dwarves, you know, obviously are like, Elna, that's not what happens to us. We actually go to our own little separate chamber in the Hall of Mandos, and then basically we're just chilling. We don't even get reincarnated. We're chilling, you know, in the Halls of Mandos, living our heavenly life or whatever it is, until Iluvatar calls us back to restore to fight in the last battle. There's a last battle, you know, kind of a sort of Armageddon type of deal. Okay. And Tolkien's Legendarium, they'll fight the battle and then they will help with the rebuilding of the new creation. So that's kind of the sort of textual tradition of the afterlife. And hobbits are actually they're a subspecies of humans. So the same things that happens to humans in the afterlife happen to hobbits as well, because they're technically humans.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question, Nick?
Yeah.
This is in my long notes that we didn't get to in the previous podcast. Okay, so the line in the Peoples of Middle-earth about what happens to the dwarves is there was light. This is Durin the Seventh, the last Durin. So the restoration of all things. The dwarves, the last Durin shows up and they become like the master crafters to build the world to come. But the line there is, there was light again in deep places, and the ringing of hammers and the harping of harps until the world grew old, and the dwarves failed, and the days of Durin's race ended. Right, which, if you're into Tolkien, you don't understand that that's like a compliment, because it's like, this is the long defeat of like big Norse energy, right? And so
big Norse energy.
Yeah. Tolkien loved that junk. And so there's this sense that like in our age, like the fourth age, like where we are technically, if we take the Legendarium as like setting up the age of men,
yeah,
then Tolkien's writing it all in a space where all the people reporting are before our age. He's Catholic, so there's like this deep resonance with it and such. But you have this sense of like none of us have ever hung out with an elf, a hobbit, or a dwarf. So what did they do? Right. But they have this vocation as Allay's creation, or the like a subcreations of Allay, to like rebuild and everything at the world to come. So like they have a role as like the master builders of the crescendo of Arda, the world, but they also get the whole, that one little line that has long defeat energy. And then the peoples of Middle Earth just moves on. Like there's not anything else there. So like, what are we supposed to do with that? Like if you're like the master builders for new creation, essentially, right? So this would be talking about new creation, like a new heavens and a new earth prior to Christ, if you're thinking Catholic Tolkien energies there. And so like you have this vocation and you get, oh, well, also the long defeat line, right? Like None of the PDFs that I uploaded when I started asking questions to it gave me an answer to this. And so I was like, I want to ask Nick about this, but we didn't get to it in our previous podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now this is the fun thing about Tolkien, and either is very frustrating or enjoyable or both, is that when it comes to the canonicity of Middle Earth, we've got the published versions, right? We've got The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, and The Silmarillion are technically the finished standalone volumes. The thing with Tolkien is that he did not stop revising everything that he had ever written all the time. There are 5 different versions of The Hobbit. There are so many different versions of The Lord of the Rings. Tolkien wrote like 6 different versions of The Silmarillion before he wasn't even published in his lifetime. And his son compiled all this stuff and was like, I guess this is The Silmarillion. Here you go. And then, you know, after he was publishing all of his stuff, which The Peoples of Middle Earth is part of this volume called The History of Middle Earth, which is now this like 14 volume extra writings that Tolkien did in developing Middle Earth. And some of it he wrote way before he finished Lord of the Rings. And a lot of it he wrote after Lord of the Rings as he's revising everything. So the answer is, we don't know what happens to the dwarves. They could be, the line of Durin could end and the long defeat happens. They could be in the halls of Mandos waiting until they are called back to fight the last battle and build the new creation. And maybe Khazad Dûm will be brought to its former glory or beyond. And ultimately, I think if we were to ask Tolkien, if he were to come back and we go, what's the answer, Tolkien? He would go, he would give us this long 20-page document. He would go back to resting. We'd come back a week later, and if we could use our medium powers to bring him back, he would write us another 20-page document with completely differing and conflicting answers.
Would he have a hat that says "Make Khazad Dûm Great Again"? Would he?
No.
You know, I don't. So.
Good. That's so reassuring.
Yeah. No, all the people out there are hoping that Tolkien would be a red hat wearing.
Yeah. I think it'd be Carolina blue, and it's like Khazad Dûm, just says Khazad Dûm.
Ooh. Look, I kind of like that.
The same people that want to ruin Tolkien also ruin Jesus and Bonhoeffer. So let's just not trust them.
There's a trend there. Well, that I think that's interesting because, you know, like, yeah, and our other podcast we did, you can find over on our website and Fourth Wall and all that in terms of the dwarves. Like sometimes the dwarves are kind of the forgotten race or in terms of you know, you have the men, you have the elves, you have the hobbits, but the dwarves are there that have a big impact in all this. And so these kind of speculative questions of, you know, will they all hang out together there in the afterlife? But, you know, what happened to after Lord of the Rings? I think they're all together. I think because like that Fellowship of the Ring, where they're sitting around trying to decide, and they don't always have to agree for everything. Yeah, their friendship, their journey together is what molded them together in terms of to either their common enemy or what they experienced together pulled them closer together to where they understood one another in terms of who they are. And so I don't think, you know, as Tripp says often on his podcast, that they are not themselves without the other, that, you know, they're not the same without the other in their lives and in their relationships matter. So I think they're all together there in the afterlife, that how they journeyed together here and what they practiced and what they learned and experienced here will affect in terms of what happens next in the next chapter or what that looks like in the next age or realm and things. So
and here's my theory, Nick. You can tell me if this is good or not. But if Gimli goes with Legolas,
yeah,
and they go off to the Grey Havens, and then you think that now a dwarf has been invited.
Mm.
Is there anything in Eru Iluvatar that would say a possibility is available to one in a race that is denied to all the others. That seems a low Eru Iluvatar move. And that's like beneath the character of God to do something like that. And so the Gimli goes is evidence that that while Eru Iluvatar didn't plan initially for the creation of the dwarves, when you recognize the role they played in a series of Yu catastrophes, it makes Eru Iluvatar's whole story come into being. They're now essential to the narrative itself.
Kind of an unplanned and, redemption arc, right? Kind of an unplanned.
Yeah, and as Gentiles, I just want to say it's really nice that that God had some improv and can we. Yeah. Other people can be grafted into the branch of promise.
Yes, and baby. So yes,
that,
and
that's like that's a Trip who will read my own religious tradition and where there's a deep wideness of God's mercy. Mm-hmm. That Eru Iluvatar would be like, well, if Gimli's here, then it is now a possibility for all dwarves. And because the dwarves have this sense that, because if you listen to other podcasts, Durin, who has multiple instantiations, seven of them, all the way to the end. And then the line has this like ongoing reincarnation-ish, echoey, shared vibe of identity. Durin is like the first fruits of dwarvish participation in the eschatological banquet.
Yeah. Say that sentence again. Say that louder in the back for those in the back. What did you say, Trip? That's a beautiful sentence.
Durin goes with Legolas into the Grey Havens, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like a way of being like, no, he's for real, right? Like Bilbo, Frodo were there.
He's right? The firstborn of the first fruits of the...
Yeah, how Christ is raised from the dead and pulls Adam and Eve and everyone else that has passed before right out of the grave, sticking it to Satan and shit.
Happy Easter. Thing, mm-hmm.
Like, because he's there, it says not just something about him as if he's like ascended to heavens as this like rare exception. He's like the revelation of God's Eru Iluvatar's ultimate adoption of the dwarvish people into the life of God. And so Gimli, as an heir of Durin, is the first fruits of Durin's people in to the halls of Mendas, all that kind of stuff. There's nothing in it that I could come up with that says that's not possible, and it's so cool it should be true.
Yeah,
that's Trip's theory.
I love it. I love it.
Dude, I love that too. And for those Iluvatar does make exceptions for people throughout the Legendarium. And for those who are unfamiliar, there is a story called Beren and Lúthien. And it is a story. It's one of the few times an elf and a human can intermingle, interwed. Okay. For some reason, Tolkien doesn't really like, in the Legendarium, for some reason, dwarves and elves can't get together, and elves and humans. And
what about the Hobbit?
The Hobbits, that's a great question. That's a great question. Can a human get with a Hobbit?
Oh, no.
But here's the thing.
I was thinking about the dwarf elf love in the Hobbit movie.
oh yeah, what was it? Feely? Is it Keely? No, who is it? Yeah, it's Keely. Yeah, and Tariel. Oh yeah.
Where is that story in the Legendarium? Where you're just
not anywhere. Oh, which one are you talking about?
The one you just referenced, like the Legendarium of the what you were just talking about
of Gimli and Legolas.
No, the starts with the B.
Oh, Beren and Lúthien.
Oh, yeah, where is that?
That is in the Silmarillion.
Okay.
And so it is one of the great tales. Tolkien has three really main texts that are considered like his epics, mm-hmm. and Beren and Lúthien is one of them. And so Beren is a man, he's a human, and he falls in love with an elf maiden named Lúthien, and they go through this awesome quest. They basically temporarily defeat Morgoth, who is like the OG Satan character. And Beren, spoiler alert, dies. And Lúthien sings to Mandos and to the Valar and say, hey, I know this dude's immortal, but can you like bring him back from the dead? And they're like, damn girl, that's a good voice. Yeah, we're going to bring him back from the dead for you. So they, and you know, they don't get to be together, but eventually they both die. Or no, it's unclear actually whether or not they die again. But regardless, they do spend eternity together, which for a human and elf is not normal. You know, they're kind of separate.
That's the story Aragorn is telling the hobbits at Weathertop, like right before they get to Weathertop. The song he sings, like, what are you singing? Oh, it's a story of Beren and Lúthien. You get these little bits in Lord of the Rings, and then when you finally read the Silmarillion, you're like, oh, junk. There's like a whole 200-page book of this story in here that one song was telling me about. And it's like why Aragorn and Arwen, like, they are the echo of Beren and Lúthien. And what's on Tolkien's grave, Nick?
Oh, yeah. Tolkien wrote the story. He considered himself to be Beren and his wife to be Lúthien. And on his grave, it's Beren and Lúthien with him and his wife's grave where they're buried together.
Come on.
Yeah, it's pretty gangster, dude.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. But I want to affirm Tripp's headcanon about Gimli and Legolas, because I do think that there exceptions could be made. And not only is it Legolas's friendship, but Galadriel actually appeals to the Valar on Gimli's behalf. So we don't know what happens to Gimli. Hair. Yeah.
He's got her hair around.
He's got her hair, dude. Put in crystal, dude.
Yeah.
Have you ever asked anyone for hair, but Will?
Yeah. I think my dog Woody. Yeah, I had some snippets of Woody's hair. In case I want to clone that thing.
You gotta pull it down.
No, I'm pretty sad, dude. Shit.
I may clone the Woodster.
didn't Tom Brady clone his dog?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'll ask Bill Belichick here on campus if that's true. When I run into him here at UNC, I'll ask him that question. All right. So Tripp's third question here.
The second question, Will?
Well, what happened to the dwarves after Lord of the Rings? And I think Nick tipped his head to that when you were talking about like Gimli, but also like you guys were,
Yeah, we don't know what happened to the dwarves.
We don't know what happened, but
well, we do know what Gimli did, which is my answer to the third question.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the third question of like where you want to go, which dwarven realm?
Yeah, I like this third question.
That we're gonna go with each other.
So if we were gonna journey to a dwarven realm, which one we go to in any of the ages? And I do not know this lore. It's not anywhere in my bandwidth. Head about that, but I'm gonna trust y'all and follow y'all and let me know, and you can convince me one or the other. But go for it. Where are we headed? Where are we going? Where are our options?
I want to go to the glittering caves. So you know how Helm's Deep in the book, which is very different than the movie of Helm's Deep. Gimli gets stuck in this cave because you get the bomb goes off and all this kind of thing, and they got to like fight back. They get stuck in this cave. Well, next to Helm's Deep, there's this cave, and like on top of him, just like taking down orcs and stuff in there, not dying. He's like, look at this cave. This is a great cave. This is high quality cave work here. What are these humans doing? They have not crafted this cave up. Why would you have such a high quality cave here? This is so compellingly beautiful, and you haven't worked the rock. And he brings this up repeatedly throughout the rest of the book to Legolas, and they make this little deal of like what they're going to do if they survive. Mm. And where Gimli wants to go with Legolas is back to the glittering caves. So what we know about is he doesn't just go back there. He dwarves this junk up in the glittering caves. Become the most beautiful thing dwarves have ever done. Gimli brings back some dwarves. They like turn this. This is how one of the coolest things about dwarves, right? Like this is a cave next to a castle, you know, that Rohan has, and they just had some giant battle up in the north you don't know about till you read.
And he's like, this has got potential. We got potential.
This is what dwarves like. He like goes to dwarves. Like half of them are dead. They just were fighting off the Easterlings in the north for the whole thing to go down. He's like, guys, you won't believe this. I was at Helm's Deep. I got cornered in this cave, and this chunk is glittering AF. And I just like, and they're like, what do you mean glittering? Like, you mean they haven't done anything to it? And he's like, no, it's just giant caverns. It is beautiful. And these humans have just been sitting next to a cave with all this potential. And then Gimli's like, man, we got to call like the Home Network and get a reality TV show up here in Middle Earth. Because we're going to redo this cave. And then there's a whole multiple seasons of them redoing the glittering caves. And it becomes, you know, it's like vacation galore for dwarves. They come in and they're like, clearly I'm on vacation. There's probably, it's one of those all-inclusive dwarf resorts. They're like all the ales going on. Look at these caves, just cave upon cave, all crafted up as glitched out.
Is it like a new resource? Like, it's not even mithril. It's like a whole new resource. What if they discovered a new element that's even better than mithril? Like in that cave, that would be rad. Like just a whole nother new compound of or an element that they came. Yeah,
yeah.
And you have to zip line. And you have to zip line. It's
called Riz
to get to it.
It's called Rizril.
Did you say Riz, dude?
Rizril. It's like it's the pretty mithril.
This mithril's got Riz. We're gonna call it Rizril.
but I just think it would be cool to go one because like what dwarf do we have any attachment to more than Gimli? Mm-hmm. Two, mm-hmm. It's like the fruit of Gimli, humans, like the dwarves, humans, and elves' friendship. And it's like what the dwarves poured their gifts that they bring to Middle Earth into after the destruction of the ring. Like, you know, if you go there, one, pretty, it's going to be fun. Dwarves know how to party. And who do you want to hear cool ass stories from more than a bunch of dwarves when they're on vacation? This is where they're going to go. They're going to go to the glittering caves, and you're going to be like, let's do this. I feel like it's a high quality pool.
That's it. And they're going to make some Rizril.
Yeah, they're going to get Rizril. You put it on. The dwarves. It's
like one big disco ball. Like they put it on, and you're like a walking disco ball, like a mirror ball. You're gonna be walking around. I love that. Nick, is there like another option there? Is there another option out there that we could go?
You put on the Rizril, and all of a sudden their BMI drops. Like Luca in the off season. They came back a skinny Luca, all of a sudden a skinny Gimli. They're like, homeboy must have been on the keto. He's like, no, it's that Rizril.
It's that Rizril, dude. All I can think of is Fat Mac and Ripped Mac from freaking It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Fatty Bulger came over there with Mary and Pippin. And now no one knows why it's his nickname. They're like, what happened? He's like, no. Mary and Pippin got tall with that int wash, but Fatty, though.
He's got the Riz. The
glittering claves. He's got that Riz roll.
I love that we invented a new element in the Lord of the Rings. Please write a paper on that, Nick, and present it.
Yeah, I'll write a paper on Rizril. I'll send it to. I have friends who write Tolkien fan fiction. I'm going to give that to them.
I need that.
Write us some fan fiction.
I need that. I need that story. Well, are there other options? I'm pretty convinced the glittering caves because I want some Riz. Nick, what else is there? Make an argument.
You put it on, and all of a sudden, you just start saying, it's Durin's Bane.
Oh my God, dude. Not it's Durin's Bane.
Oh, so good. Oh, so good. We could live it there, Nick, unless you got another something else there. That's pretty good.
I think all of Tripp's arguments about like the personal connection, like the only place that we hear a dwarf like besides Khazad Dûm, but Khazad Dûm is a shell of what it used to be. But when it's the fresh, glittering caves where Gimli's like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And even Legolas is like, who thinks dwarves speaking is like not enjoyable. He's like, oh my God, Gimli, you've moved me. Like, I've never heard you talk like this before. And when they make that deal, Legolas is like, absolutely. Like, I will absolutely come here with you. And so when an elf is willing to be like, when a dwarf says, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, and an elf is like, yeah, I believe you, we'll hang out here. I mean, where else are you going to go? You know? Riz Roland turns Bane.
Riz Roland turns Bane. And I want a Theology Beer Camp shirt that says, meet me in the glittering caves is what I want. So I want good, that shirt. Dude. I want that shirt with the big mirror ball kind of turning, you know, with some Riz. I love that. That is really good. Friends, fellow systematic ecologists out there who are listening to this, if you're like totally lost, you're just here to hang with us and laugh with us, that's great. But you can go deeper in all these things when it comes to joining the Tolkien Heads and the work that they've done, or Tolkien Pop with Nick and his Substack. And what's the name of your book that you put out? Is Tolkien and Pop Culture? Is that
That's the one. That's
the one. You can find that out there. And Tripp has many conversations, on his podcast with Tolkien and Rings of Power. And we invite you to come to Theology Beer Camp. There'll probably be a Tolkien panel. We'll go deep on this, and you too can wear a shirt. This is me in the glittering caves. I can't wait to make that shirt.
Text Taylor right now.
That's right. Oh, Taylor, I'm making that note.
Yes, dude.
Taylor, please. Make that shirt. But super fun. And part of this was a bonus episode just to kind of lure you over to our fourth wall site and our website to listen to how we talked about the phase behind us with Durin. And we love this. We geek out on Tolkien, and there's more to do. And we're going to keep reading. We're going to keep talking. We're going to keep expanding upon this fandom that we love so much. And so, Tripp, Nick, man. Thanks for hanging out, and until next time, y'all. The risen me
is the risen you.
Sees the Riz and respects the Riz.
Yeah, Durin is the OG Rizzler.
That's right, the Rizzler. Peace, y'all.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You're also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason. Or even for even reasons I don't understand, you want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page. And we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Matthews, and I'm just here to share with you guys about the Anasal Network. Hope you guys could check out Page and Pixel, which is a podcast about books and video games. Another podcast we would love for you to check out is Your Matter Matters. It's a podcast that puts the and in faith and science. We got Let Nothing Move You with Christian Ashley going through the whole Bible, one chapter at a time. And last but not least, another one called Some Joyful Muses, a music podcast with no rhyme, rhythm, or reason. This show has no set schedule or host, but periodically has some members from the Anasal Network posting discussions about various musical topics, everything from Taylor Swift to the music of Adventure Time and more. So I hope you guys will give those a listen, because I definitely will. As a matter of fact, I'm about to hit that subscribe button right now, and you should too.